Welcome to the July edition of BBRO Bcast. I'm Francesca Broom, your host and knowledge exchange manager for BBRO. This month, we are out in field with independent agronomist Penny Oakes, a member of the AICC. It's a blustery morning in Heacham, Norfolk, and I met Penny to hear about the role of the AICC and indeed her role on the farms that she supports. So after all the lovely sunshine we've had over the last few days, I'm standing in a field with Penny Oakes. And it's a little bit blustery, but I think we're all grateful that we've seen a little bit of rain in the area. So Penny, first of all, welcome to Bcast, your first edition.
Yes.
Yeah, lovely to have you along. Do you know if you had some rain on the site last night?
Yes, we had 4.5 mil, which was really welcome. But with this wind today, I think most of it's going to be blown away. It's a monitoring site, one of the BBRO monitoring sites. And so I did the traps earlier, thought I'm going to get really quite wet. Most of it had been blown away by the time I did the traps. So
yeah. I must admit, looking at it now, the ground, it's obviously quite sandy here, and it doesn't look like it's been an awful lot of rain at all.
No, we've had just over 6 inches in the first 5 months of the year, which is way below our average. But we were one of those really, really lucky spots that late May we had over an inch, which was enough. I've got some fields which 90% of the fields had not germinated at that point. They were sitting in dust. But there was enough rain. Fortunately, we had enough rain then, which just encouraged them to germinate. And those plants are now at sort of the 4 to 6 leaf stage, which is really dragging this season on. But there's a really good plant. I'm impressed how well the seed seemed to keep in that dust. But I think it was because it was just so dry. It kept well and the plants have come.
Yeah.
But they're just obviously incredibly late fields
and
now.
It's such a varied picture right across the area. We've got some plants up to 16 leaves, you know, looking fantastic, and others that are struggling. But, you know, if we get the odd bit of rain, it will be enough and they will catch up.
Yes.
It will be good.
Yes, this particular field we're in was drilled on the 28th, 29th of March. And that was one of that earlier block. I feel that the better beet this year are the ones which were drilled even earlier than that. They just seem to grow. They've got a good plant and they grew very quickly because we had some warm weather at that time. And although we've had very little rain, I never feel beet needs a lot early on because the root's going down. It's flagged a bit here, but it hasn't flagged really badly yet.
Well, that's good to hear. But before we get into the sugar beet field and what you've actually been doing here in the Heacham area, I'd just like to touch on the AICC, because I believe you've been a long-standing member and a member of the council. And I just wondered whether some of our listeners may not know much about the AICC and what it does and its sort of responsibilities in the area.
Yes, I was very fortunate. I grew up on a family farm, which is it's a great upbringing. We grew sugar beet. You know, I was hoeing sugar beet from a very young age. It was piecework, so it was a good return at that time. And I studied agriculture at Reading, and then I joined ADAS, which was just an amazing training ground. And I worked up in Beverley, then moved down to Norfolk, and I stayed with ADAS for 10 years. And at that point, I felt it was time to move on, set up my own business. And mm-hmm. So I've been an independent advisor since then. But my biggest fear of leaving ADAS, the support with ADAS was just amazing, with the specialists behind us. And my biggest fear was that, where was I going to get that information from? And so I immediately joined the Association of Independent Crop Consultants, AICC. And suddenly the doors opened, and the specialism within the group is just amazing. WhatsApp's helped as well, in that if ever I have any problems or questions, we just put it on WhatsApp and someone's going to come up with an answer, which is not always the right answer, but it, and other people disagree with it, but it's that support is around us.
And that's very important, particularly when you're working on your own, isn't it? Because being an agronomist, the best of times, you are out in field on your own, isolated for an awful long time, aren't
yes.
you?
Yes, during the busy part of the campaign or a season, we are... I don't really see anyone, but what's good is that the other local independents who aren't parts of groups will have a weekly Zoom on a Thursday night, which is great because we're all having similar problems, but it's quite nice to share them.
Yeah.
And it's been a tough season, not just because of looking after crops, but with things happening within farming in general on the political scene. And so it's I think that's made it quite a hard season for lots of advisors on the farm.
As an independent consultant, what do you see as your role working with a farm?
I think the benefits of independence are that I can recommend anything that I feel is the most cost-effective product to be using in that scenario. And you build up a relationship, obviously, with your clients. I couldn't recommend something to them that I wouldn't be using myself. And that's really nice to be able to say that. And to be a member of ARCC, you have to have your basis, you have to be facts qualified, you have to have professional indemnity cover. You know, there's various things we do really check. We scrutinise any potential new members very closely to see whether they do really, can really say they are independent and don't have any other ties.
And apart from recommending chemical sprays, etc., what about the actual crop? Do you do much in the way of helping a farmer decide on what type of varieties to grow or rotations and things?
Yes. I'm quite heavily involved with my clients on the whole farm scale. Sugar beet's my special interest, and that's my role within AICC as well. As a special interest, I organise meetings for us. But it's important to be part of the whole farm, I feel. I think it would be really difficult to just concentrate on one crop, so I get involved in rotations. I order variety seeds for the growers and order sprays, fertilisers for them as well. So I do get quite heavily involved in the whole process.
Which is great. And you've got here very sandy soil, but for the number of growers that you look after, what's the variation of soil type that you're looking at?
I'm quite lucky in some respects in that I don't have to go very far. I have some quite large clients, and probably virtually all my beet is within about 10 miles of docking.
Right.
Which brings us other problems. So most of it is on light land, but I have got some heavy land beet down on the marshes, which this year I would have said is looking really good. If I get a plant down there, I've got a crop.
And obviously you've been close to the sea. I would imagine the sea mists actually can give you quite a benefit of having some moisture in the air that others a little bit further inland struggle with.
Yes, we're in a real, I feel around this coast, we're in a sort of little microclimate of our own. We can see the sea from here, so, you know, we are quite close to the sea here.
I might have my lunch down there later.
it's one reason that, you know, we grow a lot of malting barley in the area as well, which, because we don't get those extremes of temperatures, we don't get the extreme highs and we don't get the extreme lows either, which is, there's times when I wish it was a little bit warmer, but it's quite nice. I suppose I've got used to it, and you take advantage of the conditions you have, don't you?
Yeah, you do. And I must admit, this morning, yesterday we were in 30 degrees and here we are standing in Satan. Not far from docking, and we are about 16, 17 degrees, aren't we?
And it's rather blustery. So
it certainly is.
Back into coats today.
Afraid so. So let's kind of have a look at the sugar beet field, and you can tell us what you've been looking at there and what treatments and things you've applied.
Okay. So the field was drilled on the 28th, 29th of March. It's primarily Harrietta, and then there's a few units of Kachana, two good varieties. And they were the first ones that this farm drilled. The farm uses poultry muck, which went on at 7.93 tonnes a hectare, so just under 8. And then we topped it up with a pre-emergence and liquid fertiliser just after drilling.
Right.
Which tends to be what I do. I use all the nitrogen on there in the grower. Yeah. It's 36 metre tram lines. I don't like using liquid fertiliser after the beet are up. So if possible, we do try and apply it where we've had muck with a pre-emergent spray if we need one. I don't use pre-ems everywhere, but this particular site, we have got a little bit of grass weed problem, so we're using a pre-em.
And would you know what the average fertiliser rate is for the whole field?
Because of the benefits of the poultry muck and the nutrients in it, all we had to do was top up with a bit of salt and some boron. That was the only additional.
Yeah, did you do any measurements or anything?
Yes, we do soil analysis on a regular basis. We do pH checking on a regular basis through British Sugar. And we also, this particular field, we also had a free living nematode sample done by British Sugar as well.
Yeah. And did you find any?
We have got some in the field, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. In fact, we've got a trial in the field, which hopefully we'll have a chance to have a look at.
actually standing here, it looks fantastic. The beet are a good 16 leaves,
more than 16. And, I'm so dependent on good operators on the farm. The drill operator's a really good operator, and then the spray man is just, he's just really passionate about the job he does. He's really tries to, I know that he will always try and do the best job he possibly can. And we're fortunate on this particular farm that we can still operate a FAR system. We put 4 FAR treatments on starting in April. They went on at 7-day intervals. And yeah. There's not many people who can say that, but this year I felt it was quite an easy spraying year. We can't always achieve that. We did that, and then...
But is that partly because you actually got the crop established early? Because I know a lot of people with such a small crop then struggle
yes,
to spray.
It's been much harder. Where the crop's been more variable, where you've got a few big plants and then you get the second flush of plants much later, yeah. It's been much harder. I'm using more chemistry in those situations yeah. because we had to start early, because there were weeds came early when the early beet came, and now we're going back on them again. And it's been a year when I think people have got to be really careful on their ethophemazate levels, because if you used ethophemazate pre-emergence, you do have restrictions, you know, yeah. you can't, and that's really...
Yeah, and I know particularly we're getting lots of queries about fat hen in the field.
Yes.
And that
yeah.
seems to be the real bugbear.
Well, that's interesting, because this field, we then did one more spray. So we've did 5 FAR treatments on okay. this field. And the third one, the first three were just a pretty standard Femedifam, Ethophumazate, Metamitron. And then the fourth one, we've got volunteer potatoes. There's potatoes in the rotation here.
Okay.
So the fourth one, I added some clopyrrolid and triflusulfuron in. And then the fifth one, which wasn't 7 days later, that was a bit later because I wanted to wait for more potatoes to come.
Yeah.
The fifth one just included the Femedifam, Ethophumazate and clopyrrolid, all of them with oil, obviously.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, you can see.
It looks amazing. It's so clean, isn't it? And they've done
yes,
a really good job.
And to have also controlled volunteer potatoes. You can see the potatoes here, but you can see they've picked up the clopyrrolid. And there's no question, where I've used standard programmes, I like to start off with quite a light spray. Mm-hmm. I don't like to hit the sugar beet when it's small, but I like to try and get something on the weeds when they're small. So I tried that sort of approach, but a lot of farmers, they just can't then obviously continue with that. I'm lucky yeah. on this particular field.
Yeah.
And then moved on to conventional chemistry, but I do feel this year on most fields we have probably had to have an extra spray.
And what about aphid control? Any problems there?
Well, it's been a massive benefit for me, I suppose. This field is quite close to where I live. And it's one of the monitoring sites. So I have been looking at the same 20 plants every Monday and every Thursday. And I found aphids, but if I found aphids on the Monday, I haven't given a recommendation until I've checked again on the Thursday. And there's been so many beneficials in this field.
Yeah.
Last Monday, when I checked, there were 75 wingless aphids on those 20 plants, and there was 44 parasitised aphids. There was ladybirds, there was spiders. I haven't used any insecticides on this field. And in fact, in all my sugar beet area, I've sprayed a very small 4-hectare field, which is it's got trees all the way around it, very sheltered. And I've also sprayed a field where I've got a variety trial in. But I found aphids, but there has just been... I feel this year's been extra large numbers of beneficials about.
I think... We've been very lucky in that, especially to see the aphids in sort of early May, and they arrived a bit earlier than expected, and we thought the virus levels would be high. We're not seeing it now. And I think most of the crop, yeah, obviously there are areas that are still struggling, but most of it is at 16 leaf. So I can see as we're walking through this, you've got one or two of the plants have got sort of little yellow tips, but I'm assuming that's capsid damage on those, isn't it?
Yes, it's primarily on the headlands, which is fairly normal. I must admit this year, the first time I saw a yellow leaf, because I haven't used insecticides, I thought, oh no, panic. But it's interesting because if you take those, look at the leaf, you can often see a little puncture in the back. But if you can't see that, because the first ones I found, I couldn't find a puncture hole. But if you put them up to the light, put them up to the sun, you can just see
where
sort of
break
staining
is.
Inside.
Yeah.
And,
And it's just on that central vein, as if you look there, you can usually see it.
Yes.
Now, I notice here, you've actually dug some samples out here, haven't you?
Yes.
How the actual root crop is growing.
I think, as I said earlier, most of my beets within 10 miles of docking, and that comes with the hazard of docking disorder. And so this is a little trial we did. We did it last year. The field opposite us last year was the monitoring site last year.
Right.
And we treated the drill operator. He did 12 rows with and 12 rows without NEMGuard, because that's really the only chemical option we've got available now. And I put my drone up. I couldn't see any difference at all from the top. And I was visiting the site twice a week because it was a monitoring site. Couldn't see any difference. But as soon as we dug up the roots, we could see a difference. And I was really lucky because the BBRO team, who have a really good relationship with them, they came out and they did some digs for us.
Yeah.
And Alistair came and he made an assessment of the roots. And then the samples were sent off to the factory for analysis for impurities, because I thought possibly there'd be a difference with impurities, and for sugar and yield, obviously. And their team were really careful how they dug them. They eased them out with a two-pronged fork very carefully, and the whole sample went to the factory. And there was no statistical difference in yield. But what I found really interesting is that Alistair did an assessment of the levels of docking disorder that they were demonstrating, and there was statistically more docking disorder where we hadn't used the NEMGuard. Okay. And having said they did a really good job lifting them, if they'd been lifted by a sugar beet harvester, gone over a cleaner loader, I think a lot of the fangs which we could see would have been lost.
Yeah.
And I actually feel there would have been a yield difference. But last year was a
And when we lifted them by hand, was that at harvest time or was it earlier?
It was ahead of harvest, but it was the field was harvested late. The field wasn't harvested until the new year. And so I think they did it in, it was December or January they came out and did them. So we've done the same again this year. We've done 12 rows with, 12 rows without. And Alistair said to me, there's no good. You might not see the differences on the tops. You need to dig them up and have a look at them. So I thought, as you were coming, we'd dig some up and have a look at them. Now, the drill operator did 12 rows with, 12 rows without. I perhaps shouldn't tell you which ones are with and which ones are without, and just see if you can see any difference.
Well, I think from here we can see we've got certainly some fangy legs to the roots on those, haven't we?
Yeah.
But, you know, to be honest, size-wise, they look quite clean. There's not much bearding or anything on them, is there?
No, no. So but they are a bit fangy.
Fangy on the bottom, isn't it?
A bit fangy on the bottom. Okay. So we'll go and look at the other ones.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely more fangy on this side, isn't it?
Nah, that's really interesting, Chairs, because this did not have an NEMGuard.
Really?
Yeah.
And yet you
and
look...
And that did.
I was going to say, that one...
There's definitely some fanging on those ones. And so I didn't think we were going to really get much docking disorder this year, because in a season when you'd think you are not going to have much of a problem because it's been so dry, I had lots of conversations this spring, do we need to use NEMGuard or not? And I'm looking at these and thinking, well, even in a dry spring, it has given us something.
But it is interesting to think that so NEMGuard's having an effect, but you're still seeing the docking disease, even though it's a year that you wouldn't expect to have a problem.
Yes. And so it's interesting because we've also been involved with a PhD student. I'm involved with a local charity and we help support a PhD student along with BBRO, Nyambura Mwangi, looking at cover crops ahead of sugar beet in terms of controlling free living nematode. And so we used some endophyte grasses and different treatments. We learnt something from it. There did seem to be an effect. And so this year we did same again. Alistair managed to secure some more endophyte grasses for us, and so we drilled 18 metre strips ahead of the sugar beet.
Yeah.
I've put the drone up, can see absolutely no differences between the treatments. But we're going to continue, and obviously we will be doing some digs there as well to see if there's any differences. That's actually on another farm. But next year we're hoping to have a go with some black oats and defender radish and endophyte grasses again on a bigger scale, probably a 10 hectare block of it, and just to see whether we should be looking at cover crops mm-hmm. as a bigger aid for free living nematodes. But as well as looking at it as a 1 year, the cover crop before the sugar beet, we're also hoping to look at putting the endophyte grass down for a full season so mm-hmm. we get the benefits of the endophytes.
And so when you've used endophytes, I mean, obviously with a general cover crop, you're going to destroy it sort of 6 weeks before you drill.
Yeah.
But we've been sort of pushing really for endophytes to perhaps stay in and drill sugar beet into the endophytes, a bit like you would do with under-sown barley. Again, that's more for the virus side, but how have you been treating it?
In the trial, it was destroyed. In fact, in the PhD, it didn't stay in the ground very long.
Okay.
Or this year, it stayed in the ground longer and we didn't spray it off until the spring. And so it did have longer to grow and it was a better grass. It looked a proper grass strip this year. And so it would be nice. On the evidence of this, where we are still seeing docking disorder damage, it's made me think we are going to get some differences.
So from what we can see here from NEMGARD, obviously in the same field you've got your monitoring site. So do you want to tell us what you've set up here and or what the team have set up with you and what you're having to monitor and how you found getting all that data through and how the information being fed back to you from BBRO has helped?
Yes. So the first thing you see is probably the yellow water pans, which... We have struggled in the hot weather with the yellow water pans because with evaporation, but the yellow water pans have been catching aphids and it's been really, really useful to get the feedback of the aphids that have been found in them. Obviously, I'm looking at the 20 plants for aphids, but it's also good to know what you're finding in the yellow water pans and how many of the aphids that you find are infected.
Yeah.
Because as I understand it, it's still a very, very low level of being
carrying the cholerovirus,
and it's sort of also given me a bit more confidence that I've made the right decision not spraying mm-hmm. because the infection, we didn't have much virus in this area last year either, so I'm just feeling, well, hopefully there's less chance that the aphids I am finding will be carrying it.
I think our only concern there is we are only testing for the beet mild virus.
Yes, not the virus yellows.
The beet carosis,
which,
not yellows.
Yes.
And obviously yellows is the one that does the most damage.
Yes.
But it seems to be a similar level throughout. Yes. One or two patches as you might expect. But yeah, it is actually a low virus year.
Yes. We've also got the beet moth and the silver Y moth pheromone traps in the mm-hmm. field. I caught in the beet moth trap that's now been out for just over 4 weeks. I think I caught lots of pea moths and I don't think I caught beet moth. We've been very, very lucky in this area. When beet moth was a problem in other parts of the tea country, we weren't really hit here.
Mm. I don't think it looks, from what I can see here, your crop is very clean.
We were looking at one of your trial sites at Brettenham on Friday and we were easily finding beet moth damage. I'm just hoping it's not going to be another bad year for it because it really was devastating before. The silver Y moth I was finding. So in the first 4 weeks I had 7 silver Y moth.
Right.
I changed the traps last Thursday. And so since Thursday, I've now got another 5 silver Y moth.
Okay.
Which is just making me... I have got 1 or 2 holes in the leaves.
I was going to say, I can see as we're standing here, I can see some small holes around, but nothing that would actually draw concern, is there?
No. So I'm hoping that that's not going to raise its ugly head. Then we've also got the spornado, which we've been changing once a week. And
has there been any spores found in yours?
Yes, so by mid-May, you were finding rust spores.
Mm-hmm.
And by the end of May, you were finding Cercospora spores at this site.
Yeah, and I think we have found both in a number of sites, but the conditions have not been right for it to develop. So I think part of our monitoring system is to know when the spores are there so that when the weather changes and it's conducive for that to grow, we can then say to you, now's the time to really go out and check your crops.
Yes, so, it's really useful having that information, I feel. And Harrietta Cajano, they're not the best for rust. Mm-hmm. And so it's the first disease I'm expecting to find on this field.
Yeah. And also, with you being close to the yes. coast, I would imagine that the damp evenings, etc., would be a little bit of an issue for you.
Yes, yeah. we definitely have rust in the area. Yeah. So we have involvement with you, obviously, through this site, and then we're fortunate enough that we do have meetings, obviously, with you through ARCC, several meetings with you through the year, which we yeah. really value. And yeah. also...
And that's value to us as well, yeah, whether it be the independent agronomists or those that are within the agronomist company. Yeah, the more information we have, the more we can share, I think, the better.
Yes.
And I think on behalf of all of us at BBR and the industry, to you and all of those that are running the monitoring sites, thank you so much, because if you didn't put that time and effort in, we wouldn't have the data, we wouldn't be able to get the right yeah. information out to people.
So I feel the monitoring sites are... I just love looking at the information and the different sites. We get the feedback from you. The column I love looking at is the ladybird or the beneficial yeah. column. And how some sites seem to just have a lot of beneficials, yeah. Particularly Brettingham.
Yeah. So on that note, Penny, I know you've got a very busy day ahead of you, so I will leave you to it. And thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Jess. No, it's been really good to see you. Nice to come up to see what it looks like up here in northwest Norfolk.
Yeah, even if it is cold and windy.
Afraid that was the last cool day of June, and as we enter July, it looks like things are set to get even hotter. And whilst we would all like some rain, let's hope it's going to be in a bit of a gentle form, because the next few weeks will be busy for most of you. And as the combines roll, we wish you all a good, swift harvest. I hope you have time to listen in for the August Beatcast edition from wherever you are on farm. Good luck, and thank you for listening.